Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
All right. What's up, everyone? This is Will Coleman bringing to you the RAND CRE Show. I'm missing my host today, Mike Taravella. He is out touring properties in Huntsville. So I will do my best to bring the energy and the jokes, but I've got some exciting guests today. We've got Aubrey Ennis and Jackson Russell. Both of these guys started with Marcus and Millichap on the brokerage side in Texas and Oklahoma, and have recently made a very exciting transition to EverTrust Realty Advisors with Bruce Marshall in Texas. These guys are always the best dressed. As you can see, they always got suits on and are in all kinds of things. I mean, Aubrey, we were just talking about you guys do hotels, industrial, Class A stuff in DFW. I mean, the first time we talked, you guys were looking at some very large deals in Fort Worth. So very excited to have you guys on. So thanks for joining us. And I wanted to start this off by just kind of letting you guys tell your background. It sounds like you guys do a lot of things. So I wanted you guys to kind of speak to, you know, your background and what you guys do. So if you don't mind, just kind of give us a quick intro on both of you guys so we can get to know you a bit better.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, once again, thanks for having us on. Excited to be here. And like you said, we started out at Marcus & Millichap. We were in Oklahoma City. I was doing multifamily investment sales. Jackson was doing office and industrial. Really enjoyed the brokerage side of things. It was just, you know, kind of came to a point where we saw a lot of deals moving through and really wanted the opportunity to be able to access deals on the acquisition side, start building equities, building out our own personal capital platform with EverTrust Capital and so forth. I realized kind of very quickly needed some help in order to get that done. And you mentioned Bruce Marshall. We were introduced to him down here in DFW. He's been great and kind of lining us out, providing some really key partners as well to help us get these first off the ground. But we're moving through looking at our first few closings at this point, and still working a few deals on the brokerage side as well. We're doing a lot. Jackson, what'd you like to add?
Yeah, and I would say just kind of my background has been always kind of been more on the analysis side. Really kind of stayed on the analysis side through school. Had a background in engineering, economics, and then really kind of brought that over into the real estate space over at Marcus & Millichap. Learned, you know, great underwriting skills, and we were doing these deals, and it's all about kind of, everyone talks about the cap rate and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, we've been seeing a lot of these guys go on leverage equity yield, leverage on cost for on the financing stuff. So it's been really interesting to see kind of the different aspects of on the capital side versus brokerage side of kind of how the different components really, the different metrics mean different to different players. So, but yeah, that's kind of our background.
Yeah, Mike always jokes that Aubrey, you're the Mike of the group, and I'm the Jackson of the group, because Mike's the outgoing, talkative guy, and me and Jackson are kind of the number guys that dive into the details, and that was very apparent from our first call. But if you guys wouldn't mind, talk a little about EverTrust Realty, because I was going, you know, the website you guys have done, quite a bit of deals in terms of all different aspects. So kind of just give us a brief overview of the history of EverTrust and how you guys are kind of, you know, bringing out a new chapter in that company.
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said, EverTrust Realty Advisors really was birthed with Bruce Marshall. He's the broker of record, holds the broker of record here in Texas for us. And that was kind of, you know, how we got started down here again. We franchised it through SVN International. Also a great platform, really kind of allows you to, gives you the flexibility to, you know, build out your own platform, build out your own company, which we really enjoyed. Plus there was also the benefit of, you know, they definitely didn't mind that, we were working the acquisition side of things as well. With Bruce and his partner, Scott, you know, they focused a lot on, even the buyer rep side of things. So not even necessarily just the sales, you know, they were also working with clients and institutional partners to go out there, find them deals, syndicate equity investments kind of across the board, across the country. And so we've definitely learned a great deal from them. And they've been really, really just kind of paramount on making sure that we've got, you know, the right partners, but also that, you know, the interactions between those partners are correct in the sense of, you know, respect for, you know, some of these older guys that we're doing these deals with. You know, these are 30, 40, 50 year veterans in the business. So we definitely looked at them for you know, a lot of education, a lot of understanding, and they've been crucial in helping us get to this point. Really with Evertrust Capital, we're you know, working on building that platform out into, you know, what it'll be 5-10 years from now. We'll be coming out with its own personal website for Evertrust Capital, and that'll contain the investor portal, you know, especially from the guys that we initially went and raised monies from, and so on and so forth, that they can come in, you know, watch the waterfall, watch the capital stack, see the distributions, allocations, things like that as we move forward. You know, Bruce really focused on a lot of office investments. He still owns a few office buildings with some of his partners down here in DFW. Granted, during, you know, all this COVID stuff and, you know, looking at the state of the market, it's office investments are a little difficult right now. Most people are pretty bearish on office. We definitely have had some very interesting conversations with some architectural groups, some development groups that are looking at doing some pretty interesting build-to-suits for kind of some post-COVID stuff and looking at some distressed buildings around the area. But, you know, we're really keeping a keen focus on multifamily industrial assets. And really, we really like the single tenant triple net lease space. You know, Jackson can definitely speak more on the single tenant triple net lease. That's what he's kind of specialized in all along. I was more of the multifamily guy for a while, and you know, Jackson really kind of opened my eyes, and so did Bruce, on kind of the power really in financing that you can achieve through some of those deals, just investment grade tenants, the long term kind of safety and hedge, you know, inflation hedge and everything else. But that's really kind of the direction that we're taking. Like I said, we're working on closing these first few deals, and in particular working on a single tenant, absolute triple net lease deal. And Jackson, if you want to speak on that deal in particular and kind of give a breakdown.
Yeah, for sure. I'll add a little bit more to that too, is kind of just touching on our strategy is really, if you kind of look at it, when we kind of were entering the market in the first place, we've been on such a bullish run for the past seven to eight years, you know, just we're at that peak in the cycle that we would kind of, you know, think that something's going to be coming up in the next few years. So kind of even before all the COVID, before all that stuff, we were preparing our strategy for that.
Yeah.
And so that kind of initiated the thought process of, you know, no one's really doing the core, no emerging managers really out there doing the core real estate funds, core real estate assets. So we could be kind of a one and only player in that field as emerging managers. And so, you know, sure, we're not getting as good of returns as, you know, the, maybe the 20%, 25% IRRs that the value add stuff is seeing. But I mean, if we can get 12 to 15% returns on super stable, super secure assets, then, you know, we think we can find investors all day for that. So that's definitely kind of our strategy. And, you know, we've already picked out four or five deals that fit basically our perfect mold. And to Aubrey's point, I helped convert them on to that stuff because, I mean, we were messing with that apartment deal, and, you know, the numbers were coming in and COVID hit. So, you know, the NOI was fluctuating so much month to month, but
yeah,
you look at one of these triple net deals and I can underwrite it in 45 minutes. So it's just, yeah, the speed at which we can look at triple net deals is a lot higher. Not saying that, you know, we're looking at, you know, every deal we come across, but if it fits our mold, we definitely try to look at as many as we can.
So how is the single tenant triple net lease, and you know, generally that's like the CVS, the Dollar General stores like that. How is that holding up? You know, we've seen multifamily and mobile home parks and a lot of the kind of housing space stay strong. But you know, retail and obviously hospitals retail and office is probably taking a hit. How are the kind of triple net lease single tenant stores holding up?
So we've kind of seen where, for one, on the multi-tenant stuff on the office, I think it is being affected. You got some of the smaller tenants, but if with these investment grade tenants, if they're the absolute guaranteed leases, they pretty much are, I would say 90 to 95% paying their rent on time with the full amount. So I, especially with the long-term leases, I think where you're going to see the effect is with the renewals. I think a lot of companies are not, if someone ended their lease right during this time, I don't see someone renewing for a 10 to 20 year lease in the same spot. I could even see maybe if somehow they could go to month to month or just kind of get a small short-term contract exercise one of their options to renew. But I just don't think no one knows what their plan is long-term right now. Yeah. But if they're already locked into that long-term lease, they've been having no problem to paying that. So definitely less of effect. Retail, we're brokering a deal down in Houston for retail. And, you know, I think it kind of depends on the tenant for one, as well as the landlord. But our landlord in our situation, he's kind of just working with the tenants and, you know, they're covering his expenses at least. But yeah, I think retail is kind of a different ball game, and we're not too bullish on retail, especially the big box stuff. I think a lot of that's going to kind of slowly convert into industrial as time goes on. But yeah.
Well, and just speaking to, you know, the overall state of the market, you know, obviously places like California just getting slammed, New York's getting slammed. I mean, we're getting calls from, you know, tenants and companies that a lot of people are coming down south. And everybody's kind of been preparing for that just when, you know, the tax issues were really rising. COVID has very much accelerated a lot of the trends that we were seeing pre-COVID. You know, this environment has very much accelerated those, especially e-commerce, especially really the lean infrastructure has kind of been where we have excelled, I think. You know, we didn't have a 20-year, 30-year massive corporate structure when this hit. We had to go and, you know, talk to 10,000 employees. It was, you know, we were running very lean initially, so we were kind of able to adapt and move quickly to what we needed to do, whether it be the Zoom calls and things like that. You know, we're pretty versed in just lots of different software companies and things like that to help. But you know, DFW, where we're out of, really what we're seeing, multifamily space has really just remained quite strong. We actually ranked, I think when the initial reports came out, DFW ranked like number 2 in the country for just rent collections and performance. And particularly speaking on some of the Class A deals that we were looking at, one in Fort Worth. And that's really, you know, prior recessions, the Class A stuff was kind of what really took a hit. And I think to a lot of people's surprise, it was almost, you know, the complete opposite of that. We saw C-class collections were, you know, 70%. B-class stuff was in the mid-80s, and this was according to a Graystar report for DFW. And then the Class A stuff was, you know, 98-99% for each month. There wasn't a month that the Class A collections dropped. If anything, it was just a difficulty with the leasing. A lot of people had to figure out how to convert into, you know, the virtual leasing, whether it be a Zoom call to walk around a potential new tenant. Definitely the safety features and the health, you know, of any shared amenities, you know, down to removing chairs out of the pool, you know, making sure that each chair is 6 feet apart or whatever it may be. But overall, I mean, talking with a lot of the developers down here, a lot of the owners down here, you know, these are some of the better CEOs in the DFW area. And, you know, the one thing that has been pretty consistent is core deals, especially industrial, you know, quote, right down the fairway. Deals that, you know, long-term leases like the deal that we're looking at, they're signing a brand new 15-year triple net lease, you know, with 2% bumps with an investment grade tenant. And the tenant in itself is, they're a medical device manufacturer. So they're not going anywhere. We're not worried about any sort of bankruptcies there. And then, like I said, you've got the Class A multifamily. And especially in DFW, everybody is highly keen on continuing development. You know, there have been guys down here that are quoting, we've been 120, 150, 200,000 units undersupplied since 2012. So they're, I mean, I'm watching it all around, even down the street from where I live, from the office. You know, there's 4, 5, 6 apartment complexes going up of Class A stuff. And I mean, they're leased within, you know, 18 months at the most. The one we were looking at right in Fort Worth was built and leased fully within 18 months. And that's just,
wow.
That's wild.
Dallas is such a unique place. I mean, Fort Worth as well, but DFW as a whole, I mean, is incredible. It's really unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and you look at the submarkets of DFW, like Denton, and we were working with a developer and owner up there, and they couldn't even get their it was a garden style, and they couldn't even get the units finished quick enough before people were moving into them.
Wow.
So I mean, it truly is crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty much all over the place in DFW.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the perfect storm. I remember talking to an economist at CoStar, who kind of specializes in the Texas markets, and he was like, due to DFW's, you know, width of land, there's not many natural boundaries in terms of a mountain range or a lake or a river or whatever it may be. There's so much land that can spread out, and still there is a lot of traffic, but there's so well connected highways that you know, someone can literally live an hour away from downtown Dallas and still live in a house and work in Dallas, and the houses are still affordable. And then mm-hmm. you're right, that creates so many submarkets around. I mean, Denton, I grew up in Denton. Denton's 50 minutes from Dallas. Yeah. And it's like you can live in Denton and almost consider it Dallas. And it's, you're right, the rents in Denton compared to like a Plano or Garland or are relatively comparable. So there's just, there's so much growth and ability to spread out that it doesn't become too expensive, but then the income growth is so strong in areas like Frisco. I mean, and just because of the economic boom and the affordability, more companies are going there. So, yeah. I mean, I could talk up DFW all day long, but it's a great environment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, just watching watching the construction is crazy for a city like Dallas. You know, you've got New York City that just really shut down through all of this. Nothing big going on. There was a couple of developers looking for some funding for, you know, a new hotel to go up. And when, you know, we shoot that out, hey, we've got a guy that's looking for funding, hotel in New York City. I mean, there's crickets going. But you come down to Dallas, and I mean, a brand new high rise Amelie just got built, and it's all glass. Gorgeous, class A, double A, whatever you want to call it. I mean, you know, you've got residential condos at the top of it that are million plus, that they can buy and then rent out the lower units. I'm seeing office towers go up. Now, granted, office spaces, slightly speculative, but there's still, you know, the fact of the matter is companies are coming to Texas, to Oklahoma, and it's not just a couple of companies. It's a lot of companies are making, you know, the transition here. And I think that the COVID and everything else, just policy-wise, that's been happening over the last several months, has just extremely accelerated a lot of those trends. But, you know, like we said, we're really looking for the reason we like the core deals, especially as emerging managers, is it allows us to build out a very solid base structure for us to build off of it after that point. You know, if I can build out a structure of five deals, say, and these deals are sizable. You know, if these are five deals at $50 million apiece, that's a $250 million asset under management base. And all of these tenants are investment grade. They've got, you know, 15, 20-year leases preferably on them, and, you know, guaranteed rent bumps throughout there and contractual rent payments. I don't have to worry about, you know, our 2-3 years down the road, they're going to vacate 60% because it's, you know, it's a contractual lease. So we can take those, granted the returns, like we said, they're not going to be massive returns, but it's not a value add play. It's not the purpose of that deal.
Yeah.
From that base, we're looking to do a lot of ground up development, love the value add plays, things like, you know, repositioning vacant office buildings that are going to take a hit throughout COVID, going there, and whether it be once hospitality fires back up, you know, it's a very easy hotel conversion. Even, you know, like we said, if it's a high-rise office, you can convert that into luxury living. All sorts of different applications for those types of deals, and especially now post-COVID, you know, we're going to be able to really implement some of those ESG factors, you know, clean living, clean shared space, things like that that are, you know, were accelerated trends, and those will produce, you know, those kind of massive home run returns that everyone's looking for. But just personally, we feel more comfortable with like we said, those core deals down the fairway. There's a lot of money coming in that's looking to place in the United States, especially a lot of foreign capital, Singapore in particular. And they're over there dealing with negative rates of return. So they come over, look at a core deal that they can lock up, you know, X amount they don't have to pay taxes on, and something that's, you know, almost, I don't want to say safe. We're not allowed to use that word, but they feel very comfortable and they're happy with 8% on something that's not going anywhere for 15 years.
So when I was a leasing agent, they teach you, I work for Greystar actually, by the way, they teach you to never say the word safe. Anytime someone asks about the word safe, you say, obviously no one can guarantee safety, but, and then you list the things that you do to make sure that the property is safe. Like, but we have a security guard on staff. We have, locked gates. We have X, and X, whatever it may be. So you can't use the word safe, but this is what we do to be safe.
everything described herein thereafter.
And yeah, exactly.
Is the sole opinion of X, Y, and Z. Yeah. Definitely get that.
So talk a little bit more about what a core deal is to you. I mean, is that just in the core of the city, or is that a specific metric? Like, how do you define a core deal?
And Jackson, you can add on to this. I would say for me personally, when I'm looking at a deal, it's, yes, we're definitely looking at the strength of the market. You know, if you're looking at a top 10, top 15 MSA as a, you know, core market, that's definitely one piece. Where is it sitting at? And I would say, moving past that, you have the year it's built. You know, is this a very old building? Is this a brand new construction that we're looking at? Is this in the middle of a new construction that we're looking at? And then as well, the quality of the build, quality of the tenant base, definitely looking at the strength of the demographics, you know, surrounding. And then really also looking at the economic factors and infrastructure factors, you know, what kind of policy and activity does the government have in there, in that market? What are the banks doing? What does the lending programs look like? You know, is this an oversupplied market, an undersupplied market? Are we going to be able to look at a deal, for instance, one that we're looking at is not necessarily in a top 10 MSA, but the tenant is, you know, investment grade. It's a global tenant and they do a little over $10 billion in revenue, and they do a third of their entire revenue out of this one spot. So that kind of creates a core deal in itself. Plus it's got an existing building and some brand new construction going on. And Jackson, you can kind of add to that.
Yeah. I mean, I would say you kind of nailed it. But the only thing that else that I would add to that is basically, it comes down to me and I've noticed and recently just kind of looking at a lot of these deals is it comes down to the tenant. I mean, I've been really deep diving into the tenant's analysis on the, you know, stock price, really going into their cash flows and balance sheets and all that kind of stuff. Cause if they're having a good balance sheet income statement during COVID times and their industry has been kind of on the rise even before then, you know, I feel pretty comfortable with that tenant overall. So, that's kind of one thing that I've added to kind of our core deal, basically criteria is just, really diving into the tenant analysis. But yeah.
I'd almost just add one other thing too. You know, I do want to make a differentiation there between, you know, a single tenant industrial deal and, for instance, a multifamily play. You know, the apartment complex we were looking at in Fort Worth, now that's class A, it's a core market. I mean, that's about as core of a deal as you can possibly.
Yeah, that thing was a beauty.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a stabilized asset. You know, it's over 90% occupied. Gorgeous. The tenant base was extremely strong. The suppliers that were around there were very strong. So that's really a core apartment deal, you know, class A. But you know, like I said, there's definitely several factors to look at when you do start looking at some of these industrial plays and other office space that we've been looking at. So definitely just been learning a lot, really refining our scope of what we're looking at. And, you know, on top of everything, what we're looking at is great. But what are our partners going to be interested in? You know, what are down to the attorneys? Are they, you know, are they comfortable in, you know, putting their name on something that we're going after? Is, you know, the bank, the financing partner, the co-sponsor, the co-GP, the limited partners, you know, is this a limited partner that's based in Fort Worth that's, you know, looking for a deal right there in Fort Worth, or is this a group out of Singapore that's, you know, looking for really anything in the United States with a 15-year lease? So definitely a lot of different things to take into account.
Yeah, so I'm kind of curious. So it sounds like you guys are looking for very strong tenants. That's kind of been a theme that you guys have said that, sorry, something popped up. So it's only looking for very strong tenants in terms of, you know, they've proven track record, not just kind of your low quality credit tenant. So in that regard, most people that are raising money and syndicating in the multifamily space are looking for kind of the B and C stuff, value add. And there's a lot of focus on the returns. Are you guys, it sounds like your investors kind of are a different type of investor, whereas a lot of the syndicators are taking individuals' money, 50K, 100K. I would imagine you guys are raising capital as well, but are your investors, do they care more about, obviously they care about the returns, right? But is the type of tenant, the type of deal, how much does that play into their decision to invest with you guys? Because it looks like, you know, you guys are looking at larger deals, $40, $50 million, very attractive looking deals, and have a much stronger quality tenant. Is that more important to your investors, or do they just say, what are the returns, you know, and then they sign the, I don't imagine it's not that simple, but you kind of get what I'm saying.
So I was reading a PGM Outlook the other day, and it kind of said it very well. It was talking about the liquidity portfolios that were being developed today have almost changed. And this was one of those trends that have been accelerated through the COVID, is that, you know, pre-COVID, definitely performance, you know, performance is everything. I mean, it's a very, very important piece of that. However, when you have something like COVID happen, and there's a lot of volatility in the market, nobody really knows what's going on, it shifts to more of sustainability of that return. Are they looking for, you know, something that will maybe, if we perform, you know, this, and this over year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's going to look like this? Or are they looking for something that they can easily wrap their head around? It's sustainable. You know, it, like I said, it's those contractual rent bumps. You know, the return is not as high, but the guarantee on them getting their money and what they signed up for in the first place, that sustainability is kind of what they're looking for at this point, especially in an emerging manager. You know, granted, love to go and do some very risky ground up plays. We've looked at a lot of land, and there's definitely some things that we're looking to get into. But, you know, as emerging managers coming in and, you know, doing these first few deals, it's a lot easier for them to get on board with us when the asset stands by itself. You know, the asset kind of stands alone. The tenant is going to perform whether, you know, COVID happens or anything else happens, mm-hmm. for that matter. So, and it also depends on which investor we're speaking about. You know, is this a foreign investor that's needing to place cash in the U.S. That's looking for, you know, certain tax advantages or so on and so forth, or is this somebody that's right down the street in DFW? And I'll say, you know, the foreign guys are definitely looking for a lower rate of return. They're really looking for that tax shelter and that write-off at the end of the day. Whereas, you know, we've spoken with several investors that want to do the core deals, but they're looking for 17% on, you know, on their cash. And that's good. Very difficult to pull that off on, you know, a single tenant type deal. You really got to do that value add play. So definitely different deals for different investor bases. And, you know, when we're going out there and raising money, it's, you know, we've talked to guys that want to put in, you know, $100,000. We've talked to guys that want to put in $1 million. And then there's, you know, the private equity firm, the family office, if you will, that, you know, has the ability to write the $20 million check, $50 million check, whatever it may be, all the way up to your super high net worths that, you know, essentially can write whatever they need to get the deal done. And they're really looking more for that long-term hedge and that tax incentive.
And it sounds like you guys do a better job at mitigating risk than the people that, you know, maybe it's slightly less than the IRR, but, you know, it's a slightly more safe with parentheses around it, type investment.
Sure. And that's, yeah, go ahead, Jackson.
I was going to say, I'll just add to that too. I mean, that kind of just points to our structure in how we structure these deals is, I mean, we try to keep our fees as low as humanly possible. Like Aubrey said earlier, I mean, we hardly have any overhead as long as we can afford our software and just keep on going. We really want that assets under management, and really just grow our assets, grow, you know, kind of the business. So on these first, you know, 5 to 6 deals, we're not concerned with, you know, gutting an LP person for huge fees or anything. I mean, we just want to, you know, get into the deal, and get the deal done. So, you know, if that means cutting our fees and just kind of getting by and doing a great learning experience throughout the process, then, I mean, that's kind of what we're in on these first deals. And, you know, we're being realistic. I mean, we are asking for a lot of equity on these deals. And so for someone to come in and trust us, we got to give them a little bit something on these first couple deals. So that's kind of our mentality of going into these deals for sure.
That's great. So I've got to wrap this up here. We've got just a couple minutes here left. So sorry to cut this short, but before we go to our pro tip, let's take a second to hear from our sponsors.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary 3-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
And we're back. So due to short timing here, Aubrey, I'll throw the pro tip to you. If you could give out one pro tip to our listeners, what would that be?
Legal counsel is probably the utmost highest importance for me. We've definitely learned very quickly, you know, a partner on your legal counsel team that very well understands how to navigate complex lease terms, how to navigate complex, you know, equity structures, partnership structures. Those are crucial, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, what is in black and white when everybody signs. And that's what people are going to look at, you know, if there's any question down the road, whether it be 5-10 years, they're going to revert back to the contracts. So your black and white has just got to be seamless.
Yeah. Especially when you get in that $40-50 million deal range, like the, everything lined up and correct is essential. So I love that. And you know, like you guys said, I love y'all's strategy. It's kind of the blue ocean strategy of, you're doing something relatively unique that not a lot of people are doing, you know, really focusing on a certain type of asset class that, you know, may not have as many eyes on it. You know, sure, there's a lot of dollars looking at it, but in terms of, you know, the opportunities to invest in assets like that, you guys do kind of have a unique perspective. And like Jackson, what you're saying in the beginning, you know, you can play in a field that not a lot of people are operating in. So, you know, I really enjoy that. So if anyone had any questions or wanted to get in touch with you guys and learn more about how they can either invest with you or learn from you guys, what would be the best way to do that?
I'd say you can shoot us emails, Aubrey and Jackson. So mine's aubrey@evertrustcap.com, and I can make that available in the show notes. And then Jackson is jackson@evertrustcap.com.
Yep. I would say, you know, check out our website. It says a little bit more about us. And yeah, and we'll be putting more deals up there and hopefully close a couple of these deals in the next couple months.
And Jackson, you're doing like market updates and things like that on the website, or is that on YouTube?
For sure. Yeah. We post a few on YouTube, but mainly our website.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. And what's that website?
www.evtrs.com.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you guys for coming on. It's been great talking to you guys a little bit more in detail. Every time I talk to Aubrey, it's like we go on a rabbit hole of all these different crazy ideas. So it's always interesting. And then Jackson, you know, always enjoy your analytical perspective and enjoyed seeing you guys. So thanks again for being on the show. And There you have it, folks. Another edition of the RAND CRE Show. We appreciate everyone joining us. If you have any questions or things you would like to see more of on the show, shoot us an email at info@randcre.com. Make sure to leave us a rating, review, and comment wherever you listen to podcasts. See y'all next week.